Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to Investing Simplified. I have in studio with me co-host Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning, Chuck.
And Kevin Steggy with the Big Coastal CPA Firm.
Hello, gentlemen.
And we're here to answer your questions. We welcome you to the longest-running financial show live on radio. With a financial advisor, estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free. So pick up the phone, give us a call, something bothering you, something keeps you awake at night, give us a call, maybe we have the answer. You can call us at 503-417-7626 or toll free 800-990-0750. That's 800-990-0750. Well, listen, my name is Chuck Price. I'm a registered investment advisor firm with the Price Financial Group Wealth Management, and we have had a lot of excitement going on in the market. And if you haven't been watching the market, well, you just probably been in a cave somewhere because there's a lot of action going on. Market had a very, very tough week last week. And in fact, I kind of been keeping track of the numbers here from year to date. And so far, year to date, the Dow Jones is negative 0.147%. The S&P is up 2.34, but just a week ago, it was up 8.62. So it got a good pounding last week, as did the markets. And as I've been saying on this show for some time, when you have a 5.5-year run-up, something's going to happen now. Right now, this week, because this is the closest week to that period, this is the 7th anniversary of the market correction. And people tend to look back and say, oh, well, it's been 7 years, so I'm really not worried about it. Well, you should be. You should be because another one's coming, another correction. And when we look back at the Dow Jones right now that closed at 16,544.10 this week, the Dow Jones on 10,907, and I just tell you that's 7 years ago, and we have not had an up market for 7 years, okay? Because when the market did correct, in 07, it went down for approximately almost 9 months. So it took a big hit, went down a little more, and at one time the market was down over 50%. That's where people lose sight of this whole thing about your investments. It's not what you gross, it's what you net. You know, you don't want to get grossed out with numbers. You want to net your numbers. I'm just saying, you got to net your numbers. And if you don't look at what your net return is, everything else is insignificant. And when we look at the Dow Jones here, and we're not celebrating the seventh year. Nobody wants to see a market correction. No question about it. But if you look at historical past when these things happen, you go back to 07, then you can go back to 12/31/99. Let me just give you some numbers from that. And I do this each week, but if you're a new listener to the show, you may not have heard this before because there's nobody on the business networks, there's nobody on the radio, there's nobody talking about this. I talk about it to my clients all the time. But most advisors don't want to talk about this because they don't have a strategy to counteract it. So they don't want to bring this up. But I tell you, if you're not looking at the worst of times, what your investments have done in the worst of times, and you're only looking at the best of times, you got a problem. and your money has a problem. But let's look at the Dow Jones. Again, it closed at 16,544.10. On 10,907, the Dow Jones was at 14,164.53. So from the time it went down as much as almost 50%. The Dow Jones right now for the last 7 years is up a whopping 16.8%. That means 2.4% per year. I am excited. I'm telling you, that is not a good number for the biggest 30 stocks in America. That is not an exciting number. But now, let's look at what the Dow Jones has done since 12/31/99, another period of time when I tell everybody wants to blame George Bush for the bad economy. But if you go back and look at the reality of when this market started down, William Jefferson Clinton was still president, folks. It happened a year before George Bush got sworn in. So from an economical standpoint, if you want to talk about facts, and a lot of people talk about emotion when it comes to money, but you better start looking at facts. And the facts are this market started down when Y2K happened. That was a good year and 2 or 3 months before George Bush got swined in. So you got to look at the numbers. The reality is the market, since the Dow Jones closed on 12/31/99 of 11,497.12, in those 13 years and 9.5 months, the Dow Jones is up 43.9% or 3.18% per year. That is almost 250% lower than the 80-year average of the previous 8 decades. Now, that's got to tell you something. If we take a look at the S&P 500, 500 best growth stocks, supposedly, they closed at 19,06.13. Now, where do we stand versus 10,907 just 7 years ago? They're up 21.79 or 3.11%. That's better than the Dow, but my gosh, growth stocks versus conservative big whale stocks, which the Dow is, they should be producing 20 to 30% higher. They were only up 3.11% per year. Their 80-year average prior to that time was 10%, or right at 10. That's 300% less, over 300% less. The S&P closed on 12/31/1999 at 14.69.25. So that means it's up 29.73 in 13 years, 9.5 months. That's a 2.16% return. So, as I like to call it, if you want to put a blame on the economics of this country, you've got the Three Stooges, Larry, Moe, and Curly. In this case, Bill Clinton, George Bush, and Barack Obama. There's your three guys to blame, the Three Stooges. If you want to blame the economy, look at the facts. Those numbers, those spending numbers, we have in the last 6 years doubled our national debt up to almost $17 trillion. Folks, we are mortgaging our grandkids and our great-grandkids' future. And if you're a parent or you're a grandparent, you ought to be talking to your politicians. And I got to tell you, I've heard some really stupid ads lately on TV. I have to wonder, who are they talking to? Somebody is an idiot. Hey, Carl, what's the legal definition of plagiarism?
Plagiarism.
Well, plagiarism, I would say, okay, is where you took somebody's information.
Yeah, you're holding out an opinion or a statement of fact, or a description or a writing or a statement that is not your own.
Well, yeah. And there's an ad on TV, two people running for office. And I won't mention the name, but they're running for a Senate position anyway. And one of them claims that this lady plagiarized Karl Rove in the Republican Party. She plagiarized their theory for her theory. You can't plagiarize what you are. She is a Republican. She would do that. And I listened to that ad, and I asked my wife, I said, what does that mean to you? And she said, well, it sounds like to me that she committed a crime taking information from somebody. And I said, I know. And that is the most misleading ad I've ever seen in my life. And I can't believe if I were running against that guy, I would be filing a lawsuit on him for slander, because she didn't plagiarize what she believes in. When you plagiarize somebody, you're taking somebody else's ideas, calling them your own. But if you're both of the same ilk and you both believe the same way, you're not plagiarizing anything. That is how you are. So, I mean, you know, listen, folks, what this show tries to do is to try to give you a common sense. That's why we call it Investing Simplified. Keep it simple. Make your own decision when you get the facts. Look at it, weigh out the facts, and come to a reasonable decision. And it's kind of like when I listen to Harry Dent, the economist, who's on the air, and he's talking to somebody at MSNBC or even Fox Business, and they say to him, I don't believe in demographics. Look, that's like saying, I don't believe 2 and 2 equals 4. I just don't believe it. Well, look, demographics is not a religion. A religion is belief. It's based on faith and belief. A mathematical fact is based on facts. It's numbers. Any way you cut it, 2 and 2 has got to add up to 4. If 2 and 2 starts adding up to 5, we all got big trouble. And
well, you know, one thing, as a lay investor, if you will, a vocation that I am getting out of more and more personally, because it's just not a good thing for me to head up myself. But one thing I watch the markets a lot about is volatility and liquidity. And it seems like with our current technology and we're in a new age of investing, and where the big boys can trade in nanoseconds, see orders coming in and be able to trade nanoseconds ahead of orders coming in, stuff. You've got to know that volatility and this liquidity is not a friend of the guy that is just sitting on the sideline, putting his money in and watching, and in many cases, you know, getting 20-minute delays on quotes. You know, how can you even be in the same game if you don't have, if you're going to be in the game, I think you gotta be in with somebody who knows what they're doing and is looking out, you know, for your best interest and has the technology and capability to do that.
You know, Kevin, you're exactly right. In my book, Investing Simplified, that'll hopefully be done next week and will be out. One of the parts that I talk about in there is that, and the fact that large traders have a distinct advantage over the average investor, and there's no question about it. In fact, I even quote Everbank did a study the last 10 and 20 years, and the average person that invested for themselves over the last 20 years had a negative 3% return. You can't compete with something you can't see. I mean, they're done long before we hit the trade, no question about it. And we tell people, look, that doesn't mean you still can't make money buying individual stocks. You still can't make money investing. You can, but you just got to be more cautious about the way you're doing it. And you got to be careful, and sometimes you got to buck the trend, but you got to be careful in what you're doing, because right now, you know, and I've been saying this for some time on the market, I've been saying, you know, this is the time to take some gains off the table. Don't be greedy, you know. It's just a great time. You know, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, and right now there's going to be some hog slaughtering when this thing crashes. And I do think, if you watch the money news networks, Fox or MSNBC or CNN, tested a little bit about, but they're really not a money station; they're more of a news station. But if you look at the financial statements, you're hearing more and more people say now we're going to have a major correction. And they're even saying something that I've been saying for, Carl, I've been saying for about 6 years on the air, is, look, this market is not real. It's overinflated. Look, when the Fed stepped in and started printing funny money, and I finally heard, you know, we've talked to Harry Dent on our show numerous times, and Harry has said that the government is like a heroin or a cocaine addict. they got to get their fix. If they don't get their fix, the market tanks. Well, when Janet Yellen mentions about she's the big coke heroin dealer, you know, she's the one that dishes out the drugs. And when she says, I'm going to quit dishing out the drugs, guess what happens? You have withdrawal. All of a sudden, the markets start going crazy. And what is she going to do? You know, is she going to print more money? She says she's going to stop. Hey, how do you stop cold turkey, a heroin or a cocaine? I don't know because I've never really known one. So I don't, I mean, I've read enough about it and I've heard about it. But I understand it's a pretty terrible reaction. I have seen, I have known alcoholics. And I know what they go through. And
it gives me chills and sweats just to think about it, Chuck.
I don't think we want to go any farther there. Well, listen, that's a good time to break. But listen, if you got a question about your portfolio, you got a question about your investments, this is the place to give us a call. We're going to come right back with Carl's comments. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Give us a call toll-free, 800-990-0750, 800-990-0750. We'll be right back.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepsen.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is the time for Carl's comments, and today I want to talk about something that is really serious in our society today. And unfortunately, it does get a lot of press, but I'm not sure that it. I don't know. I'm guessing that most families don't deal with it, but those who do find it extremely distressing and sometimes extremely damaging, and that's financial elder abuse. And there are different kinds of abuse, but financial elder abuse is one of the more common ones. And regrettably, it's often done by the people closest to the family, namely another family member. But so I just wanted to talk a little bit about what it is from a legal standpoint, and so that people kind of understand what we're talking about. So what the law says is that financial elder abuse is when someone wrongfully takes or appropriates money or property from a vulnerable person. And a vulnerable person is anybody who's over 65, anybody who's financially incapable. That means that they're unable to manage their financial affairs. A person who's incapacitated, that means that they have a lack of judgment and perception such that they can't even take care of their own essential requirements for their physical health and needs. And so someone who's really disabled. And another person who is also a vulnerable person is a person whose disability is such that they're susceptible to threat, duress, persuasion, that kind of thing, and to the extent that they can't really, you know, make their own decisions. So the law allows people to sue for financial elder abuse. So if you're committing financial elder abuse, you're certainly vulnerable to a lawsuit. And unfortunately, a lot of times the very people who do this sort of thing, they've spent all the money. And so it probably doesn't work out as well as it might. But so who can sue? The vulnerable person, the person whose money was stolen, the guardian or conservator of the vulnerable person, the personal representative of the estate of the vulnerable person, and or the trustee of a trust for the benefit of the vulnerable person. So basically, just, you know, if the person dies, the financial elder abuser is not necessarily off the hook. So, and there's a 7-year statute of limitations on financial elder abuse, but it's from the 7 years from the discovery of the conduct which constituted the elder abuse. So that could be a long time, you know, if it's kind of hidden in the records, it could be a long time. So, you know, a lot of people think, oh, well, if I just sit around and nothing's going to happen to me, well, it could, and it should if you've done it. So who can be sued as a financial abuser? Well, certainly those people, it can even be third parties. People like lawyers, people like employers. If you're a person who knowingly acts or fails to act, knowing that there's abuse that's happening, and you, in other words, your inaction may constitute, you know, an action for elder abuse because you may be letting it happen when you should have done something about it. So that's a real problem. Well, what do I mean when I say wrongful taking? That when we define elder abuse as the wrongful taking of property from a vulnerable person. So what does wrongful mean? Wrongful means that it has an improper motive or improper means. And some examples of that, and I think the most common one, is what we call undue influence. Undue influence is being able to, you know, it's a form of extreme persuasion to a vulnerable person who you know, you might, if it were just a regular non-vulnerable person, they'd say, no, I'm not going to give you the money. But the undue influence person says, oh, okay, you know, you're there, or you persuade them. Other kinds of improper motives and means, violence, threats, intimidation, deceit, that's a big one, misrepresentation, bribery, the threat of unfounded litigation, defamation, disparaging falsehood, all kinds of things that can give rise to that sort of thing. And, you know, there's a very, very common thing that comes up, and that is, she gave it to me. You know, these are the excuses that people have or the reasons that they state. She would wanted me to have it. I helped her out a lot. It was a loan. I really needed the money. I was going to pay it back. She really wouldn't miss it. She had lots of money. She really knows what she's doing. She said she was going to, you know, it was part of my inheritance now. Hogwash. And we all know that. And so, you know, get real for all this stuff. And it's not your money. That's my biggest problem with people who do these things is it's not your money. And the elder person, the vulnerable person, is the least likely. And they're the ones that earned it. And if you're taking it, you're not earning it somewhere else. So, you know, go get a job. Do something other than steal it from your elders. There are some real costs to this if you get caught at this sort of thing. The statute allows to sue somebody for treble damages. So if you've absconded with, you know, $30,000 from grandma, grandma's trustee or grandma's personal representative or grandma herself could recover $90,000, get a judgment against you for $90,000. And I'm not convinced, that's such a bad thing. Also, in addition, there are attorney's fees. So you're going to tack on some extra $1,000 here and there for the attorney's fees. The statute also allows for restraining orders and injunctions and all sorts of things that can prevent you from doing that. So if you're going under, if you're wandering around and you're taking the money and you don't think that you can get caught on it, and the court can restrain you. And if you violate a restraining order, they can hold you in contempt. And ultimately, they could throw you in jail for contempt if you refuse to obey the judge's instruction. Judge can also order a conservatorship or a receivership and take the money out of the hands of the vulnerable person. And then you're really doing a disservice to the vulnerable person if they're not, you know, totally incompetent, but, you know, now all of a sudden they've lost their independence totally. And at least, though, we've had to do that on occasion. We've had to file conservatorships for people and essentially have their ability to make financial decisions taken away from them. Mostly just because we had to do it to prevent the family member from, you know, absconding with all the money. So anyway, that's another thing to think about. So there are some institutions that are actually, or people that are actually not subject to this, to the particular lawsuit that I'm talking about, which is financial elder abuse, which is financial institutions, banks and stuff, believe it or not, healthcare facilities, and broker dealers, believe it or not. Now, that doesn't mean that they're free from lawsuits on other areas, but in other words, just the statutory claim for what we call statutory financial elder abuse, there's a specific exception for those.
The broker-dealers may be, but the individual financial planner is not.
Well, right, and then there's also this, you know, yeah, well, there's certainly breach of fiduciary duty, there's a breach of contract, there's, you know, out-and-out stealing, there's fraud, there's deceit. There's a lot of different things that they could be sued for, but just not necessarily this one that subjects them to the triple damages and all that other stuff. So anyway, that's financial elder abuse. If you see it, you should make sure that you report it to the appropriate agency, Human Services, Senior and Disabled Services, even the police department, and watch out for your elders. If you know that your family member's having trouble, well, you know, go ahead and try to work it out, try to stop them from doing this. But sometimes you can't. You know, sometimes you and I know that in many circumstances you have the person who's doing it is either sort of a spendthrift, I guess we'd say, that just can't handle money and they're always wanting more. Maybe that person has a gambling problem. Maybe they have a drug and addiction problem. In any event, they themselves are not making good choices as far as taking the money from a vulnerable person. So, but that doesn't make it right. And they shouldn't be taking somebody else's money to feed their own problems.
Well, I think that's one of the key things to look for if you're looking out for somebody who's elderly, and you see a relationship that wasn't there in the past that all of a sudden has appeared. That doesn't seem right. A neighbor, maybe a grandchild that really hasn't cared about the person for years and years, and now they're buddy-buddy with them. I mean, things like that are definitely things to look out for, and especially when you may know of that person's financial situation and there is a need. And a lot of times you won't know about it. I mean, people have, hidden, you know, like you say, a gambling problem that's, under the table and things like that. I mean, when there's an obvious financial need, somebody's addicted to drugs or, you know, what have you, those are key things to look out for.
Oh, absolutely. And I think another kind of thing, there are certain kinds of things that you look for. For example, if you've got all of a sudden there's this kind of confidential relationship between this person who's, like you say, it's new to the family or newly, you know, new attention is being paid. And then all of a sudden, the next thing is that they are, all of a sudden you're getting some negative feedback from the vulnerable person who says, you know, is kind of cutting other family members off. And all of a sudden they're being isolated. That's a worrisome situation because if your grandmother, you know, has been wonderful and you've been spending lots of time with her and all of a sudden she doesn't want to talk to you, it's a good idea to take a look and say, well, who else is in her life now and why is that?
And it's usually couched under terms of, oh, grandma is just so wonderful. We just love your grandma. We love spending time. And it's this manipulation type stuff that covers it over.
Unfortunately, a lot of time it is family members that are doing that.
Those sons and daughters of yours, they don't care anything about you but your money. That's why they're spending so much time with you. Oh, yeah. That happens all the time. And again, hogwash. You know, it's, don't listen to them either. So.
Well, listen, we're going to be right back with the some more hogwash and some other things that we're going to have. But we're going to come back with the tax investigator and talk about a great subject everybody loves, and that's income tax. But we'll be right back with Kevin Steggy, and you're listening to Investing Simplified.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
You are listening to Investing Simplified, and following Carl's segment is always difficult, especially when they call my segment hogwash. And seeing as I'm going to be doing
I didn't hear that.
Seeing as I'm going to be doing some shameless self-promotion, that probably is hogwash. So, definitely give us a call if you want to know which stock Chuck says is going to triple in the next couple days. He's giving me raised eyebrows. 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750. And definitely call up with your legal, financial, or tax question. And we usually do a pretty good job of getting down to the bottom and sending you on your way in the right direction. Recently the Treasury Inspector General of the IRS came out with some statistics on bad tax preparers. And yes, I'm bringing up a pointing gun toward my profession. And over the last 3 years, they had about 2,000 complaints that were addressed to them, of which a third of them went uninvestigated. And so that is not a good thing. But what I do want to say is there are a number, most tax preparers are good. And over half of taxpayers use a paid tax preparer now. 6 out of 10 taxpayers are using a paid preparer. And so it's very important to vet out who you're using and to find a tax preparer that is appropriate for your situation. You know, if you just have a W-2, you probably don't need to be going down to a downtown CPA national firm. And I don't even know if they take those type of clients anymore, but that would be a pretty expensive tax return where off-the-shelf tax software probably works for you. But anymore, it's the tax code and really just planning your situation. Even if you do just have a W-2, there's a number of things to consider. You know, should you be deferring into your 401k? Where's the best break point for that? Many cases, you shouldn't be deferring in your 401k. It depends. And so there's stuff to look at. You know, are you paying off student loans? Are you considering a mortgage? You know, if you're on the more simple end of tax prep. A lot of things to consider there. Are you a small business? Are you thinking of starting a small business? At that point, definitely get somebody that's been around a while, that knows what they're doing, and can give you some advice on one of my biggest questions I get is, what can I truly deduct? You know, nobody wants to pay more taxes than they have to. And when you see that balance due at the end of the year on your small business, when you've tacked in self-employment tax and federal and state income taxes, at that point, it's a wake-up call, and you realize, okay, I need to take advantage of all the deductions that I'm legally entitled to take. And so in this regard, I'd like to introduce you to Baker and Colson. We have been around for 40 years, and we consider ourselves the biggest CPA firm east of the river in the Portland metro area. We have about 7 or 8 CPAs in various areas of expertise, but we all focus on taxation. We don't go the route of traditional audits. I'm not saying IRS audits, but traditional audits where you like a municipal government where you're auditing receipts and expenses and stuff. We're all trained in that, but we all specialize in taxation and small business accounting. And so, I mean, we focus on income taxes, estate taxes, transfer taxes, gift taxes, generation skipping taxes, payroll taxes, business and occupation taxes, property taxes, sales and use taxes, and self-employment taxes. So there's enough right there to focus solely on that type of stuff and then start tacking on retirement plans and so on and so forth. And there's a number
of things. Kevin, one of the things I constantly, when I have new people come in, and we've had quite a few people lately come in because of the radio, but and about the market fluctuating and stuff and getting some advice or doing a financial checkup. And one of the things I do is I always review their tax return. And it's amazing to me how I run into very smart business people that are doing their own taxes and using various things online that they can do. And when I ask them questions about why they don't have their own retirement plan or why they're... And they don't know because they don't know what they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sad part about it. You don't know what you don't know.
Yep.
And that's why I tell people, look, if you were going to have brain surgery and you had to go to a neurosurgeon to get operated on, are you going to go look at it online and figure out how to operate on yourself? I mean, that's what you're really doing with your taxes. And taxes are very, very complicated. I mean, Social Security is complicated, but I'm telling you, that you take a look at that tax book, that is a scary-looking pile of paper. And if you're not getting professional advice, you're just, well, you're tugging on Superman's cape, and that's as far as I'll go.
That's right. So we have a number of large clients that you would know of, and we have even larger number of smaller, hardworking small businesses and, you know, retirees that we spend every bit as good time on as we can to affect a good tax situation for them. We've taken tax positions to the tax court, and fortunately in that position it came out in favor of our client, but more importantly, we know how to keep you out of the tax court if that is your thing. And
well, and we've had you serve as expert witnesses and consultants with respect to, litigation that involves tax issues.
That's true.
And always with excellent results. And so we're, there's a crossover. There's a lot of, cross-pollinization between taxation stuff and legal stuff. And we've been working with Baker & Colson now for quite some time on, even in times of, like structuring a transaction or a variety of things, where not everybody can know everything there is to know, and I know some taxation, but I'm not gonna. I usually tell people, well, this is what I think it's going to be, but I'm we want to talk to your CPA, or we want to go to Kevin before we make the decision. So you gotta know as a professional, you gotta know what your limits are and what your expertise is in. Not that you don't have to have some, as Chuck has a lot of knowledge in taxation, but he doesn't do tax returns, and neither do I. So, so
yeah, I'm going to always refer that to a qualified CPA.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So it's more important than ever to have somebody who has been around, knows what they're doing, and can really help you get your tax situation squared away, working for you. I think one of our best benefits is we are always timely in our service, and we are, if you call into us, we're going to get back to you right away. And we've had a lot of people say they really appreciate that about us. So with that said, we have a, with the hogwash out of the way, we have a an interesting tax case where a fella had a business that he was looking to sell and was going to have a, in my opinion, a huge tax bill, over $5 million. I think that's big for anybody selling his business. But he had been promoted a certain way to set up the sale of this business where he wouldn't be owing income tax. And it sounds too good to be true. And he consulted his tax attorney And this is where I think you do the right thing, especially in a situation like this that is so significant dollar amount. His longtime tax attorney gave him the okay on this transaction. However, it failed, as you would expect for something like this. And the benefit, and my whole point to this is the benefit here is because he consulted an independent outside source, he was not subject to the 40% understatement penalty, which is a huge savings. And so there's nothing wrong with taking an aggressive position, unless you're wrong. That's the wrong part of it. Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with vetting something out, taking a position, and especially if you have taken a reasonable position and relied on somebody who is reputable and doing, you know.
So the key thing there is he took an aggressive stance on doing his taxes.
That's right.
And the good thing is the IRS said, no, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But at least he didn't get hit with the penalty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, and that's probably good, you know, tax advice that the guy gave him to try it. If it had went by the IRS, he'd have been real happy. But since it didn't, he didn't get no harm, no foul.
That's right.
Yeah, that's
exactly
right. And the important thing there is you've got to be prepared that if...
We got a question. Oh, we got a caller on the line here. We got Joanna from Gresham who's got a question.
Yeah. Hi, gentlemen. How are you today?
Great.
Okay. I had a question on... We have three siblings in our family, and we have one parent that's still alive that's getting quite elderly, and we're just wondering, now that we're all here together, we have one sibling that lives quite a ways away, and we're together this weekend, what things we should have in place prior to our last parent passing away, and then also what steps need to be taken when that last parent does pass away, what things immediately upon that happening should be taken, what we need to do.
Well, that's a little bit of a broad question, but let me try to answer it broadly. So the first thing you have to ask is mom or dad still, you know, competent? Could they do some planning? You know,
No, they are not.
They are not. Ooh.
Yeah.
Have they done any planning? Are there any wills or anything like that?
Yes, there is a will dividing the estate equally between the three siblings.
Okay. Well, that's good. Now, then the next question, I guess, is since the first... Your first parent passed away earlier. Was that a while ago, or?
Yeah, in the end of 2010.
Oh, okay. So that's quite a while ago. So, and would the estate? Do you anticipate the estate would exceed $1 million?
No, we've already had an appraisal done, and it is well beyond that.
Well,
below that.
Okay. So what? Actually, at this point, there wouldn't be a whole lot that you could do except that, you know, keep close watch on your parent, and because basically when he or she passes away, the will is still good, and mm-hmm. depending on what the size of the estate is, you know, you can't really change anything much at this point, because she's, you know, or he is not capable of making those changes. Right. But as far as doing things, you know, I think that it would be helpful, I guess, if you could, you know, find out as much information as you can, you know, inventory the financial aspects of her life or his life, and try do whatever you can to preserve those things. Now, if worse comes to worse, if he or she is unable to manage their own affairs and none of you have the current authority to do that.
Well, there is a power of attorney in place.
Okay, there you go. That's good. Now, that can be problematic with banks, and if you have, is there anyone who's writing checks for the parent?
Yes, we're paying her bills for her. She's in a foster home right now.
Oh, okay. Well, one of the things you have to remember, too, is that if now, are they still, are they paying, are you paying that as a private pay to the foster home? In other words, it's not state, it's not Medicaid or something like that?
Yes, it's a private pay, yes.
Okay, because if that runs out, if his or her money runs out, and then you run into a Medicaid, then the estate takes on a new context, because upon the death of the surviving spouse, the state of Oregon, if you've been receiving, you know, like on like medical care on the Oregon Health Plan, or if you've been receiving, you know, Medicaid, which would be paying for the foster care home, then the state's going to want their money back. And but I mean, that's the way it works. I mean, it's just be mindful of that. And also, if say, for example, the first parent was on Medicaid for some reason or receiving state assistance, then upon the death of the surviving spouse, they're going to look at that estate too to collect their money. So you might want to think about that.
Yeah, that wasn't an issue. Yeah.
Okay. So, other than that, if the estate has, depends on how much money there is, if the estate has less than $200,000 in real property or $75,000 in personal property, including cash and things like that, you could do what's called a small estate when mom passes away or dad passes away. And that would be substantially less complicated and substantially less expensive than a standard probate. Mm-hmm.
But we do know that they have like about a little under 10 acres out in the Clackamas area, and it was appraised for under $500,000, about $365,000.
Okay, well that's going to put you into the probate category there because it's over But there again, I mean, that's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, one of you or some of you are named as personal representative, I guess.
And
all of the siblings get along okay?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Nobody's running around and causing the other family members trouble or anything.
No.
No. Okay. Well, good.
No.
Then basically, what would happen would be, basically, if the worst happens and you can't manage the money. Say, for example, you had to sell this property, and you had your power of attorney, and for some reason you couldn't sell it because you needed to sell it for his or her care. Which I know you probably don't want to do that, but you know, if worse comes to worse, that's what people do. Then the worst case scenario would be that a bank or a lender or a realtor or whoever wouldn't accept the durable power of attorney, and you'd have to go get a conservatorship for the parent, guardianship and a conservatorship, so that you would essentially be a court-appointed person who would have total authority over their resources. You would then be able to, you know, sell it or lease it or whatever you wanted to do to get the money that was necessary for the care. But then you have to go through a bunch of accounting kinds of things for the court, and if you can avoid that, that's good. That's what the power of attorney is for. I would say if you're acting upon the power of attorney, just keep really, really, really good records of money coming in and money going out. Make sure there's a piece of paper that shows all of it.
That's the main thing with
looking out after other people's money.
So when she does pass away, what steps do we call an attorney right away? Or?
Well, it doesn't have to happen really all that fast, but as soon as the dust settles, there's a tendency to want to run out and do everything all at one time. As long as everybody's getting along, you know, and I mean, I tell the horror stories on this show of people running in, and I had one where the lady was being, you know, she died at her home, and she, you know, they were taking her out in the hearse thing, and the some of the family members showed up with pickup trucks and started loading up the personal items, you know. And I mean, that's an extreme case, but since you guys all get along, that's probably not going to be there. And if she's in a he's in a foster home, well, that's probably not going to happen either. So mostly you get a death certificate, you go through as the funeral arrangements, however that works for your family, and then once you get the death certificate, You'll need the original will and the death certificate, and call an attorney that's nearby or that's comfortable with you or whoever you're comfortable with, and then you can talk about the probate. And we've been doing tons of them over the years, and we've gotten pretty efficient at doing it.
We will probably come to you because you helped us when our dad passed away. So.
Oh, well, thank you very much. So that's kind of what does happen. And then it's a matter of, it's not like it's a frozen thing. Things happen. We can, the personal representative can sell the assets and pay the bills and pay any taxes that might be due. And then at the end of the day, after a 4-month wait period, and especially, again, I say that the greatest blessing people can have is a harmonious family, which sounds like you do. And that means that, you know,
the probate is much more simplified when everybody's getting along, and you know, and so because the stuff that costs a lot in probate usually has to do with the fact that somebody's fussing about it and or being uncooperative. And yours sounds really relatively simple. If the estate is less than $1 million, then there won't be any inheritance tax. And so it should be pretty straightforward. There's a tax return that has to be filed, or two, depending on what the income picture is. Mm-hmm. But that's all stuff that can be handled during the process of the probate. And we can guide you through that very, very easily. And the personal representative generally doesn't have a whole lot of work to do except gathering together information and making decisions with regard to assets and things like that. But there's no court appearance to go to or anything like that. It's mostly a paperwork thing, which generally the lawyer does.
Okay.
So
all right. Well,
pretty, pretty easy. As most people don't like it, but we try to make it as painless as possible.
Right. Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the call.
Good call. Okay. Thank you very much,
okay.
Joanna.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. We're going to take a quick break. Come back with the Knowledge Trust. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com. 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had $1 million.
Well, we were just talking about that $1 million amount, and if you had $1 million, what would you do with it today? That's a great question. And I would certainly think you'd want to put it in a position where you would not risk losing it or taking a big hit on it right now. So I would be very conservative with that if I were you. And,
or giving 10% upon your untimely demise to the state taxing authorities.
Absolutely, or more.
That's right.
Yeah, especially if you had other assets, maybe well more. We were just talking, Carl just had that call in from the lady and Joanna. That was a great call. Those are the kind of calls I think you can help people on the air to do some things that they may have to go in and visit with an attorney. And in this case, you know them and they're clients, but that's what this show can do. This can give you some advice, and maybe there's another 10 or 12 people out there with a very similar situation. And when you call in and ask the question, you're not only helping yourself, you're helping people out there in the listening audience that may have a very similar thing. And we can sit here and talk about things, but we can't always hit the thing that's keeping you up at night. So you need to call in and ask us. And, we're in the last 5 minutes here or so of the show, so we're going to kind of run down. And Kevin, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how would they do it?
BakerColson.com, 503-666-5569, and we're at 2414 Northeast Division out the east side of Gresham.
Okay, and Carl?
Warren Allen is located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue. That's one block north of Gleason on 122nd. And it's 503-255-8795. And it's warrenallen.com. It's on the web. Oh. And you can email to that at info@warrenallen.com.
Okay, and we're at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. We're located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103. And we're right off the 205. You can reach us at 503-253-3000 or toll-free 877-50-PRICE. I also have another website set up called AskTheFinancialDoctor.com. We're promoting our book on there that's coming out next week. Investing Simplified is due out about somewhere between the 14th and the 17th. We do have an offer there. You can pre-order at a discount price. The book's going to sell for $19.95, but you can pre-order it at $15.95. And we're going to be setting up a campaign on the book, and I'm going to donate $1 of every book sale to the Wounded Warrior Project, something that I've donated to for years.
You know, Chuck, one of the things I was just thinking about, the lady who called and anybody who called, and just the stuff that we talk about generally on the thing, is that even though we're giving you some information, but it's really without being able to talk specifically and learn everything there is to know, it's general advice. It's to give you some kind of direction. It's more like a compass, not a map. And you should, before you act on those things, you should make sure that you coordinate that with your own professional advice in almost all cases. I mean, I know that we would want that to happen no matter who that professional would be. So
yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like you're watching a high-risk sporting event on TV. It's something that you don't want to try at home without getting professional advice in the way you're doing it. And that would go for your taxes, your investing, or your legal work. You want to seek a professional, whether it be one of the three of us or somebody else, but you want to seek a professional to get the absolute advice based on your situation that is best for you. In this show, we're very general. We can't really get down to specifics because we don't know all your financial net worth and everything else. So some of the things we say are very general, and they have to be.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about just yesterday, it was late in the afternoon, and it was Friday afternoon. It was too late to call Baker and Colson. And I had this question, this tax question that came up, and I think I knew the answer, but I wasn't sure. And of course, Kevin wasn't there. In fact, they weren't there. And so I tried to look it up myself, and I ultimately found the answer. But I spent like, you know, half an hour getting there, and I said, doggone it, Kevin, why'd you go home so early?
Well, listen, thank you very much for listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be back next Saturday. Don't forget, write down the numbers. Give us a call next Saturday. Write down your questions during the week and give us a call. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Have a great week. Simplified.